Hello and welcome to Irreverent Testimony, the podcast by and for millennials and Gen Xers about left-wing politics and such. It is January the 8th, 2016. That's right, 2016. We've been away for a little while here, just, you know, New Year's and getting our stuff together and paying the bills and all that good stuff. I'm lucky to have with me today both Rachel and Dana Hutchison.
Hi, everybody.
Hello.
And as usual, I'm Travis, and we're going to just talk about some stuff in the news. We got militia-type people in Oregon.
Yes, we do.
Bravely commandeering an empty bird-watching nature center.
Yep.
And we've got President Obama's executive movement on guns, and of course the presidential race, all kinds of other stuff going on. I'm going to turn it over to Rachel and Dana. Let's talk about what's going on.
All right. So first I want to start with Oregon, because it's kind of the thing that's been in the news the most lately. It's a little confusing on so many levels, just in terms of what's actually going on, but also what are these people doing and what is the government doing? So I want to kind of talk about that for a second. Does somebody want to give a kind of basic rundown of who these people are, where they are, and why they're there?
Dana?
Yeah, so, you know, at the center of this are, of course, the Bundy family, famous for the standoff at the Clive
Nevada.
And Bundy Ranch.
Right.
Yeah. It's actually Clive and Bundy's son, is it Ammon or Amon?
Ammon, I think is how they pronounce it, yeah.
Yeah. He's kind of leading the call to things. He made a call on Facebook out to get as many people as he possibly could to, after a rally for a pair of ranchers that have been having a dispute with the Bureau of Land Management, who were arrested for arson because they were burning federal land that was next to their land. They were let out early,
right,
and being put back in jail, and they were protesting that. And then post that rally, he grabbed as many people as he could from that, which was supposedly, according to his account, 150 people. Turns out it's more like 12 or 13 people, to go take over this currently empty wildlife refuge in southeastern Oregon.
Yeah.
Right. Well, the folks that they turned themselves in to go back to prison, not to get too into the weeds, but what happened was there's a minimum mandatory for arson on federal land, which is 5 years, and then the local judge said, 5 years is too long. And then they kicked it back to the local judge and say, no, they got to do the minimum at least.
Yeah.
So, but those people don't want anything to do with the Bundys.
No.
Their names are the Hammonds, yeah. And they have said publicly kind of wishy-washy about their involvement, but then have also said, like, really, they should not do this, and we're fine with going back for the other 18 months or whatever it is, and it's really fine. But they've then changed their requirements. So originally it was, as soon as the federal government releases these two ranchers from federal custody, then we'll stop. And then the ranchers turned themselves in, and then they said, oh, well, never mind. As soon as the federal government turns over this national park, essentially, or wildlife refuge, I guess is what it is, to the people, then we'll leave, which is unconstitutional, unlawful, and never going to happen. So,
well, a lot of this all stems from their very bizarre reading of the Constitution and a misunderstanding that federal lands are public lands and belong to the people and as part of
so
the people.
So why not me?
Yeah.
I'm a person.
Yeah,
exactly.
Exactly. Exactly. So the federal government doesn't have the right to own federal lands. And
it's a step short of the sovereign citizen people.
They actually
says,
are.
Yeah, they are.
Well, sort of.
So if you look at, like, they invoke several times the is it Article 4?
Article 4, which
is where the sovereign citizen
movement.
But
you know what? That's
from.
Part of it. That's the thing. And I'll turn it back over to you guys. But it's sort of a mishmash of people with different things. Some of them are talking about eminent domain.
Sure.
Some of them are pissed off about Waco and Ruby Ridge.
Yes.
Some of them are pissed off about the Hammonds. Some of them are, you know, are just pissed off that they have to pay the government to allow their cattle to graze on federal lands. It's just like all these gripes and grievances with the federal government. Basically.
Well, yeah, I mean, it definitely has all of the different elements of the don't tread on me kind of libertarian Tea Party kind of aspects of things mixed with the gun nut culture.
Yeah.
And I think for a lot of these people, there's a reason why it doesn't need to have a cohesive reason behind
it. No, they're just pissed off.
They've just been waiting for a reason.
It's the old South Park. You know, every South Park episode, there's like a rabbled crowd, and they don't really know what they're rabbling about, but they're just pissed off. So
yeah, exactly.
They're gonna yeah, it's basically that.
Well, and it's interesting that you bring up Waco and Ruby Ridge, because I think the way that the government is responding to this is a direct result from those two, what turned out to be total disasters, and trying to retake
Absolutely.
Compounds.
And sure, sure. In fact, today I just saw a news story that there's another group that's come in called the 3% of Idaho, who have come in to basically what they call secure a perimeter around the building that these people are in. According to them, in order to prevent another Waco or Ruby Ridge. But these are not just like, you know, kind citizens hoping for a peaceful resolution. Yeah. If you look at their website, they say, freedom, liberty, and the Constitution. We will combat all those who are corrupt. And their motto is, when tyranny becomes law, rebellion becomes duty. So it's the same brand of nut job wackos, and the Bundys and their crowd are very excited that they're there. And Ammon Bundy was quoted today as saying that he would have been worried if they hadn't come, that something like Waco would happen.
You know, I'm going to sort of maybe parse that a little bit. I think that the media got very sort of hyped up and excited, and they talked about some of these people who sent these weird, teary, melodramatic Facebook messages, like, if I don't come back, you know, do whatever.
Yep.
You know, you may not see me again, I may not be alive. And I don't get the sense, though, just from listening to the on-the-record stuff from the Bundy and the other people there, that they're looking for a big firefight showdown with the federal government. Some of them are, probably.
Yes.
But I don't think too many of them that were likely to see that happen.
Well, I don't think the government has an appetite for it at all. They literally are doing nothing. They're sort of like, from what I've heard from the FBI on the major news outlets,
they're just going to wait
them
out.
Yeah. We're kind of just going to let them have a minute, like a toddler. Yeah. Just like, take a minute. And if you get bored, we'll stop doing this. And if it goes on too long, we'll have a punishment. But let's just give you a minute.
We'll cut
to
the
like,
power. We'll do this.
Yeah.
But they're not sending in the ATF
guns
a-blazing anytime soon.
Well, and the last time they did that, it was an embarrassment for the agency, because it was at the Bundy Ranch. And, you know, they had, you know, basically their raid was taken hostage by people on ridges with sniper rifles and stuff
pointed
on
at law enforcement.
Yeah. And they just stood down, and I think they're a little embarrassed by the way that that went down. I don't think they want to see a repeat of that.
Right. But they also don't want to massacre a bunch of, you know, gun-toting white dudes. So, and also, there's been this sort of meme on social media about bring snacks. Apparently, they didn't come super prepared.
No,
they're like, I brought some road beers and some guns,
some
but I'm hungry now. So, like, if you guys could send in food, and you're like, wow, survivalists for sure. Yes.
real men of the land.
The actual whole thing on social media has been pretty fun to watch. They've not been taken seriously in any way.
There's
the hashtags
so many
of Al-Qaeda and
not
Vanilla ISIS.
Vanilla ISIS is one of my favorites.
Yep. Yeah, they're not being taken terribly seriously. They're kind of a joke. But, you know, I sort of want to give them the benefit of the doubt and say, okay, if you got a gripe, let's talk about it. But, God, there's so much contradictory shit. Like, they're pissed off the federal government owning all this land, but they get all these huge government subsidies.
Yes.
And, you know, basically a lot of this government welfare. And then, look, if we're going to talk about returning the land to the people, how about the actual Native Americans?
Well, that's
this
exactly
land is taken?
Yeah. So there's a tribe of Native Americans in Oregon who have said that part of the wildlife refuge is sacred ancestral lands, and that they're really upset that these people are coming in and sort of making a mess of that.
Yeah.
And they've also said, one of the tribal leaders came out and said that they feel like partners with the Bureau of Land Management and the people who run this wildlife refuge in basically preserving some of these remains and cultural artifacts that are present on that land. And they also bring up the idea, just like you said, that, you know, who's taking what from whom and where did that start? And it's certainly not the government taking it from white ranchers. And maybe we should go back a little further and think about who took it from who originally owned it. So that's been a pretty compelling argument, at least for me.
Yeah, I just don't see that anything really terribly interesting is going to come out of all this. I think they're just going to go home at some point and say,
For sure.
Put on the best face, say, we made our point, our voice has been heard, you know, we said our thing. And
can I just bring up one other thing?
Of course.
The birders. Have you heard about the birders?
Amazing.
They're pretty pissed off, huh?
Oh, my God. It's my favorite part of the whole story.
Those people are serious, man.
Do not fuck with the birders. I swear to God, it's so funny. So the wildlife refuge is apparently also a refuge of birders, people who come out and are avid bird watchers. And these people are really serious. They have very serious camera equipment. They have very serious camouflage. They have a lot of survival techniques. Like they go into the forest and they stay for days and they don't move and they record birds because that's their thing.
I saw the big ear. Yeah.
Yeah. And these people are messing with that for them. And they have come out publicly and said, don't mess with us. Like, we see you and you won't see us.
We've got binoculars.
But we have
cameras.
And they're like, we've been watching you for years and you poach on this land and you kill animals on this land and you do illegal things.
That's
and
one of the
reasons
that
pictures
the,
for years.
That the, what was it, the Hammonds got in trouble too because they were poaching on federal land.
Yeah, I mean, the first time that they were convicted of arson, it's long held belief that the reason they were setting the fires
poaching,
was to cover up. Yeah.
Another one was they were trying to set a backfire and they didn't know what they were doing, so they burned a bunch of
basically like a fire moat, which didn't work out very well for them. But yeah,
you got to know what you're doing when you do that. Even the professionals screw that up sometimes.
Yeah, yeah, I love the birders. I think that's the greatest thing ever. They're like, we've been sending your files to the FBI for years about poaching, and now that you've taken over our refuge, nah, you're done.
Interesting.
We'll be watching you. So I love the birders. But yeah, that's kind of the rundown of
okay,
the
so there's some
Oregon
some drama things to watch, but yeah. You know, I don't see this turning into a big epic firefight. I mean, even Fox News is kind of handling this with kid gloves. I think they've got egg on their face from the whole Bundy thing a little bit, and they're not. Yeah. I mean, they're covering it kind of, but they're not like it's not wall to wall 24 hours.
No,
you know.
Especially not like the ranch thing, the Bundy ranch thing.
No,
not at all.
Yeah, yeah, they were making him into like George, the new Neo George Washington.
Yes,
for some reason. But so that's Oregon. Any other thoughts on that?
No, I'm good. Yeah. You? Okay. I want to talk about Hillary Clinton for a minute.
Who?
Hillary Clinton.
Oh, yeah, her.
Her.
Right.
But that lady person running for something president, I think.
Uh-huh.
Yeah. So good news on her front is that Planned Parenthood endorsed her, which may not seem interesting or weird, but the interesting thing about it is that Planned Parenthood has never endorsed any candidate ever during a primary election.
Right,
they have only ever endorsed candidates after the primaries have passed and the candidate has been elected. So they always go with Democrats, obviously. But it's interesting that they've chosen to endorse Hillary Clinton before the primaries really have even started.
Yeah, yeah. And that's not a help to Bernie, unfortunately, for him. Because that's one of the groups he's really trying to make inroads with, African Americans, women voters, Latinos. So, yeah, it's becoming, you know, and every time I turn on and listen to a pollster, MSNBC or CNN or everything, I'll remember she had a big lead too at this point, and then Obama came roaring back. It's, you know, I love Bernie. I don't see that sort of percolating within all these other groups that I think are pretty solidly ready to vote for Hillary.
I agree. I wonder if you guys have thoughts on how much these endorsements really matter to voters. Because my idea is that if you're engaged in primary politics, you're engaged. So if Planned Parenthood endorses Hillary Clinton, does that mean that you think Bernie Sanders has a bad record? Do you look into it? Do you think that people make their choices based on these endorsements or not?
Well, I don't think it's a zero-sum game, but go ahead, Dana.
I was just going to say, I don't really see anybody who's a Bernie supporter tucking tail and running over to the Hillary side because of Planned Parenthood's endorsement.
No, no, of course not. What an endorsement like this would do, rather than sort of change a bunch of minds, is if you're kind of out there in the ether and you're sort of paying attention, you haven't really picked a candidate yet, and then you see something like this, you might be, oh, okay, all right, well, this is, you know, that might nudge you in that direction.
Right, and it gets your candidate's name in the news.
Yeah.
And it gets them on all of their mailing lists and fundraising lists and all of that stuff as well. So from a fundraising perspective, it might matter. And maybe, like you said, if you're in the ether and you're like, I stand with Planned Parenthood because that's a social media thing, but I'm not really following this, and they're like, oh, Hillary's our guy. Maybe you're like, oh, okay, Hillary's my guy. But I think that's a small percentage of voters, to be honest.
Yeah, I think the only time that endorsements really matter is when somebody ends up backing somebody extraordinarily terrible and then, you know, years later make a run on their own.
The press still gets excited about endorsements. Most of them are pretty meaningless. Celebrity endorsements mean absolutely nothing.
Yeah,
of course.
Most small-time politicians means absolutely, like the Trey Gowdy. Who did he? I don't even remember who did. Who
I don't
did he endorse?
Even remember,
was it Cruz?
But I remember
Rubio?
Thinking like
it was Rubio, right?
Nobody wants that guy's endorsement.
I don't
are
even,
you kidding?
Yeah, I don't even remember who he endorsed.
I don't either. But it was like,
it's
oh
like,
no,
what
I'm
is
sorry.
That going to count for?
Yeah, no, for sure.
Yeah, it'll matter obviously if it's neck and neck and Bernie and Hillary and one of them drops out, they have to endorse the other one. That's pretty much a big deal. But,
right.
You know, short of that, I mean, when O'Malley drops out, who he is that going to matter?
Nobody cares.
Not at all.
Nobody cares.
Jim Webb, we wait with bated breath to see who he's going to endorse.
Well, that one might be interesting to know who not to vote for.
Right.
Right. So, endorsements are what they are. But Planned Parenthood is a little bit different. It's not a person.
Right.
It's an entity that represents right now in the political spectrum, much bigger things, including some politics that we are actively involved in right here in Denver. And we'll get to that at the end.
Yeah.
Kind of what's going on with our deal here.
But there's more Clinton stuff.
Oh, yeah. Yeah. Go ahead.
So she's had a requirement that by the end of 2015, she release at least 82% of her emails. And they missed that by 8 days, I guess, because it's January 8th. But today they released 3,007 more pages of emails.
Mm-hmm.
And some of them had been, 66 documents specifically, were upgraded to confidential status post her sending them. So
right.
Basically, they weren't confidential when she sent them, but they were marked as confidential later. Is that a problem?
I don't know or care.
I don't see it being a problem.
Does anybody still care? I, when I talk about anybody, I don't mean about the people that pontificate about this 24/7 and already have their political stripes lined up. I mean, like, undecided voters are sitting out there, and they're still going to be moved by, you know, day 873 of Servergate or whatever the hell.
No, and like the news is so mundane. I mean, even this, there were 66 documents that were upgraded to classified status. This is such a snooze fest for most people.
Yeah,
there's one specific story that I think is interesting that's been sort of pointed out in the media, and that is that she was emailing with Jake Sullivan, who was a key person in her campaign, and she was talking about how she didn't receive the talking points from some certain evening.
Okay.
And he said, well, we're having trouble with the secure fax line. And she said, now, evening talking points are basically like the press junket. Like, what happened today? What did we say to the press? What did they say
These
back?
Are State
kind of
Department
stuff.
Talking points for whatever day, whatever
right.
year? Okay.
And so she said, well, if you can't make it work, just make it a non-paper document and send it unsecurely with no header. So then this email was marked confidential later. So there's going to be a firestorm about this, I think, just because
maybe
it's evidence of her covering up that she didn't.
No. It's media talking points. There's nothing national security in media talking points.
No, but then the question for them, I think, on the other side is going to be, why then mark it as confidential later?
Well, who's deciding to is state deciding to mark it confidential now?
Yeah,
State Department or the Justice Department, or okay, whatever.
I don't know. Chase
that rabbit down the hole.
But
if
then
you want.
The State Department came out and said, we researched this. They never did send that email to her. It was sent over secure fax. Not that it was confidential to begin with, because it's literally press briefings, essentially, which is very public because the press. So
a list of things that we made public today.
It's confusing that it was marked confidential, but I don't think it's damning in any way that even if it had been sent over email, it wasn't anything that was.
If that's the best they got,
yeah.
I mean, this, you
yeah.
know, this is why Michael Bay made a movie.
Ugh.
Because there's nothing interesting in the emails, so we better make a big budget,
you know,
fictionalized movie.
Needs Michael Bay in order for it to be even slightly interesting.
Right.
And then there's some more Blumenthal stuff, of course, where he's sending her stuff and she's very politely saying, thank you so much, such good info, unsolicited. And then there's a couple where he mansplains to her about international relations and how she should use her record to run for president, which I'm like, oh, honey, I'm so sure that she needed your advice and to explain to her about international relations because she's, you know, the Secretary of State. So good thing she has you. But really nothing damning. It's just, you know, more talking points for the press, to your point.
Well, then I want to talk about a little bit the Donald Trump-Hillary wars of the last few weeks. weeks where Donald Trump has decided it's time to relitigate Monica Lewinsky?
Yeah.
Yeah, talk about that a little bit. Because
we didn't have enough of that in 1998, and almost 20 years later, we're gonna do this again. And it's funny just seeing sort of the talking heads respond to it, because basically what Trump is saying is he's sort of saying it's her fault, or she's an enabler, or something, I don't exactly know what he's saying, but he's somehow saying Monica Lewinsky, that was a big horrible scandal, and somehow it's Hillary's fault.
Yeah, he's tapping into my mom and my mom's generation of women who think that the fact that she stayed with Bill Clinton makes her weak because, you know, being cheated on should always be a relationship-ending event forever. And
you think that's his angle?
I do. What do you think, Dan?
I don't know. The only one that I saw was him attacking Hillary, saying that she does not really get to have a voice in the room when she was speaking specifically to victims of sexual assault, because her husband is a sexual assault machine. And
what?
So if she's going to defend him, she has no right to say that.
Well, that was a hot topic like a week ago. Whoa. when there was a meme going around conservative Twitter and it percolated a little bit into some of the other conservative media that they finally arrested Bill Cosby. Why not Bill Clinton?
Right.
And I think most people just kind of just shrugged and said, Jesus, you guys are crazy. But should we bother examining it? Should we dignify that
we can just say plainly, one was systematic sexual assault of people you drugged, and one was consensual sex with an adult intern. So those things are real different.
Well, just more than one adult, you know, intern. He had lots of
multiples.
Affairs.
Okay.
Sure. And
all
also
of these
trying
people
to dig
consented
back into something even further back in the past that was something that was.
Well, I'll get to that in a second, but let's not even talk about that for a second. Let's just say, okay, Bill Clinton's a philanderer and Bill Cosby's a serial rapist. The American public is stupid enough to where we create one meme. Why this bill and not the other? That'll resonate. I mean,
no.
Is that what they're thinking?
I think it resonated with Bill or with Trump.
Well, it'll resonate with the people that just hate Bill Clinton because say anything, you know. But Obama's a Muslim. He's gay. He's from Kenya. He wants to take your guns. Whatever. Say whatever. And if it's something that pisses you off, you can assign it to him and pretend you believe it. And I guess with Bill, if they're gonna say he's just like Bill Cosby, well, yeah, I hate Bill Clinton. So sure, why not? He's just as bad.
But they love Bill Cosby, right?
No, you know what? I don't want to narrow cast and go too far and say like it is sort of a lockstep conservative thing that they're all for supporting Bill Cosby. It's actually sort of a weird conglomeration of some African Americans who are a little too paranoid that any famous black person that gets in trouble must be innocent and being framed. Mm-hmm. And also, in combination with some crazy weird MRAs who think that kind of thing is okay,
or that think that they're all lying,
woman who claims sexual assault is lying,
or there's the group of people that say anyone who goes after a celebrity is obviously looking for a payout,
right?
Or fame.
Right.
Yeah.
By and large, I'm pretty confident that the vast majority of conservatives feel the same way we do. This guy's a horrible, disgusting rapist, and he should rot in prison. But there's a few, and they have a voice, and it pops up if you're a Fox News contributor or if you're the New York Post and you want to try to slime and get some dirt on the lady that finally did get Cosby arrested.
Yeah.
And it puts it in a bad light. And I put this up on Facebook, and I asked some of my few conservative friends, including my dad, like, what is this all about? And you know, my dad says something like, oh, actually, Cosby votes Democrat. He's like, no, you missed the point.
Who cares?
what I'm asking is, I'm seeing some outlets like from Fox News, the New York Post, see it's like working some sympathetic Bill Cosby angle. Is there some conservative meme here where they're supporting him? And the answer is pretty much no. But there's a few crazies out there, and I guess you'll always see it. Yeah. So
definitely the MRA faction, though, I will say.
Sure.
They have been loud, as always, loud and loud.
And they tend to be conservative, so
yeah,
there you go.
Of course. Well, women hating, you know, anti-feminist garbage people.
And they hate Star Wars, too.
Of course they do. There's a lead and it's a lady, and the other lead is a black dude. Their life is being taken away from them and all of their
white
rights.
Genocide.
White genocide.
White genocide.
White male genocide.
Well, George Lucas seems to be on their side.
Yeah, we can get into that whole thing later, but
different podcast.
I wanted to say something about the Bill Cosby thing. I saw an article earlier today that was kind of playing it from an angle that I hadn't seen before. I'm interested to see how this plays out. It was an article praising his attorney for the great job she did doing the press junket, and how she's really going to be the best attorney for the situation.
Okay.
And I just thought it was a weird angle to be like, way to go, attorney, defending somebody who everyone is relatively certain.
Well, look, even to humor my friend Raul, who I know is listening to this, yes, even Bill Cosby deserves a fair trial and his day in court and the writ of habeas corpus and everything else.
I happen to agree with Raul on this point. I agree that everyone deserves a fair trial and their day in court. I just happen to think that rich people and famous people get a much more fair and or less fair in terms of less fair to their victims than average Americans. And that's my objection.
Well, right. And the other angle is some people say, well, geez, all this press, Bill Cosby's not going to be able to get a fair trial. Well, maybe there wouldn't have been so much press if he didn't rape 50 different women over the decades.
Crime was not so egregious.
And his strategy wasn't to sue some of his victims for defamation, maybe.
Right.
You know, and then have his lawyer call the press and say, hey, we're suing these people for defamation. Oh, we can't get a fair trial now. It's all over the news. My heart breaks. Anyway. Yeah.
Really can't argue that this was too sensationalist to get a fair trial when they were the people putting in the news cycle on their own significant portion of the time.
Certainly, the defamation stuff, absolutely.
Yeah.
I just thought this particular article, it was interesting to hear somebody praising the attorney so much to be like, I guess like it was like a really great thing, which it is. Everyone should get their own attorney, but it was almost like thank God Bill Cosby got a really great attorney.
And he doesn't have just one, but his main attorney right now that's doing most of the talking is a woman, right?
Yeah.
Yes.
That's correct.
Which is smart. Shitty, but smart.
Sure.
Okay, anything else on Bill Cosby,
on Cosby
or
slash Clinton?
Well,
the one thing I was going to point out, there was once a story floated, and it didn't go anywhere, that Bill Cosby did do something sort of rapey once.
You mean Clinton?
Supposedly.
Clinton?
Didn't I say Clinton?
No, you said Cosby.
Oh, no, Cosby did that lots of times. There was a story, and it was floated somewhere, and it wasn't picked up by international news, and Rush Limbaugh, you know, pounded on it for a week, but you know, there didn't seem to have any legs to it. So I was thinking maybe it's
that's specifically what I think Donald Trump was referencing, because he had pulled up, you know, the...
Well, that's dangerous ground for Trump, because, you know, people forget we've had so many friggin' Trump news cycles. There was an allegation recently by his ex-wife that he sexually assaulted her.
Yes.
Right.
So does he really want to go there?
I would think
he would want to stay away from it. But
you would think, right?
He's not a smart man, guys.
Thinking ahead? I'm going to disagree with you on that. He is playing the media and a large portion of the American public incredibly well. If this all may be a big, huge reality show, I don't, you know, what it is, or just cement his name in history as a crazy guy who did this political stunt and turned the political apparatus on its head and broke the GOP. I mean, whatever the hell he's doing, you know, he's tapped into something, and I can't say he's dumb.
I mean, he's playing...
I could say he's horrible.
He's playing clickbait and cable news like a heart from hell.
Yes, absolutely.
But he's not thinking ahead. I mean, he says things, and then I feel like I can watch him go, I'm not going to go back on it because that's not who I am, so I'll just defend it, and then looks like even crazier than the thing he said originally. I just don't think he's planning ahead very well. I think just whatever garbage he thinks in his head comes out of his mouth, and then he goes, no, that's what I meant, because blah, blah. You know,
yeah,
Trump,
but it's part of a larger strategy and narrative that's working. Never back down, you know, speak off the cuff, even if what you're saying is crazy garbage and
stupid
lies. And
yep.
His target audience is eating it up.
Yeah.
It's true.
And from a plain clickbait, perspective, if you keep people looking at the next crazy thing you said, there's no time to reflect on
no.
all of the things, exactly. like all of the implications of what you said yesterday.
Yeah.
So true.
Like people probably listening now, they're like, what? Trump was accused of rape? It's like, yeah, that was all over the news for 48 hours.
3 weeks ago. I forgot because since then he's said XYZ.
Right.
Whereas
right.
like someone like Mitt Romney says something about binders of women or Etch-a-Sketch and it stays in the news cycle for months. Trump says so much crazy shit daily that you're like,
well, now Trump's
what?
Reviving the birther Whatever. Thing yep. on cruise.
I know, yeah. which is so interesting.
I was actually waiting for that one. I was waiting for it.
He's being much more subtle about it than he was with Obama.
Yes.
He's like, oh, well, he should take care of this now so there is no controversy.
Yeah.
It's like, he's yeah. like, while creating the controversy.
Right.
And it's like people forget, especially the mainstream press, that like Trump was all over this crazy Obama birther shit, big time.
Yep.
Oh yeah.
Big time.
Well, and Ann Coulter just came out and just I don't even want to.
I've stopped paying attention.
Dignify
to
her necessarily,
she's so,
but
no, she's so obviously a troll that yeah. I'm yeah. not even going to dignify.
But she did come out and say a bunch of crazy shit about Ted Cruz and how he's an anchor baby and that's not part of the Constitution. And I mean, she's a vile human garbage person. But anyway, I have interesting news out of Virginia.
Oh,
one of our faves. So Virginia is an open primary state. Which
yes.
is unlike Colorado, where you have to register as either a Democrat or Republican to vote in the primaries or caucuses.
Yeah, same with
Colorado
New Hampshire,
caucuses.
I think.
Yeah, lots and lots of states are.
Yeah.
But Virginia is an open primary state.
It's
so
a big
you can
one.
Be
big one.
Anything or nothing and vote in whatever one you want.
Yep.
So the GOP has come out and asked for a loyalty pledge. So in order to vote in the GOP primary election, you have to sign a pledge that says, and I quote, "My signature below indicates that I am a Republican." And this is new, and there's a lot of people that are upset about it, and they're weird bedfellows. So there's a group of black pastors that are suing because they feel like this is discriminatory and against a bunch of parts of the Constitution, including the Equal Protection Clause and First Amendment, that kind of thing. And then also Trump, super against this.
Yeah, because he wants to pick up some independence.
Right. His idea is, even if you're not, you don't want to vote Republican necessarily, you want to support me, you should be able to vote for me.
Right.
In the primary.
Yeah, this doesn't make a lot of sense. Oh, now I get it. Okay.
Yeah, they don't want trolls.
I see.
They don't want a bunch of Democrats voting for Trump, is what I think.
No. It's the establishment trying to stick it to Trump.
Yeah, yes. It is. But I think it's also trying to get people to say, I guess, not that they can't vote differently, but that I'm on record saying that I am a Republican, so my vote...
Well, I don't understand how this even works and how this has any measure of being enforceable.
Right.
So
it doesn't. The legal professionals have said, like, this has no bearing on law. Just sign the thing. Who cares?
Oh, like the guy in Alabama who's telling people not to gay marry the Roy Moore?
No,
legal... wait. Let me ask this. Yeah. Let me ask this. So is this the Republican Party of Virginia? And
yes.
And they run the primaries?
Correct.
Okay.
Correct.
And so when people show up to vote in the primary.
Yes.
Well, okay. Yeah, that's completely unenforceable unless they change the state constitution, right?
Right. It's just an honor pledge. Like, I promise I'm a Republican for reals.
Is that like a virginity pledge?
Yeah, because
we know how well those work.
Those work great, too. yeah, basically. And so there's been also pushback from the black community in Virginia that has said we're concerned that people are going to release the names of black Republicans and there will be a public backlash against those people if they voted for a certain candidate.
This is what Rush Limbaugh did in 2008, what he called Operation Chaos, which obviously didn't work. But his whole deal was... in all the states that were open primaries, he said, you know, go vote. I don't know if he wanted to vote for people. Yeah, he wanted people to go vote for Hillary when Obama was clearly ahead so that there would be chaos at the DNC. You know, smart move. It's like, why not? You know, nothing wrong. Of course, it didn't really work. And, you know,
people
Obama's
said that about George W.
stronger.
Bush, though, too. People were like, he's such a joke. Go vote for him. He'll never win. the general. So
not
we seeing, do
not
that.
Not in my parts. I guess it was different being in Florida, but
yeah,
we had a real sense because there was no viable candidate on the other side that this bastard's going to win, and he did. But yeah, that's really weird. Out of Virginia, I'm going to have to look more into that because that doesn't make a whole lot of sense to me.
Yeah, it's super weird, and lots of people are really against it, and there's a lawsuit, and I mean, we'll see what happens. But to the point of a couple of legal scholars who chimed in, they said, you know, it's not necessarily unconstitutional considering how many states have closed primaries and closed caucuses to make people register before they vote in the party for that primary.
Well, not federally unconstitutional.
Sure.
But it's got to be...
Well, yeah, each state has their own rules.
Yeah,
absolutely.
It's got to be against the state rules.
Apparently it isn't currently.
And this is why it can be difficult, sort of changing topics. That's why it'd be difficult for some candidates to get all their ducks in a row. And Santorum had all kinds of problems actually in 2012, you know, getting on the ballots. And now poor Martin O'Malley's not going to get on the ballot in Ohio.
Oh, no.
Yeah.
Oh, baby.
You guys didn't hear about that?
No.
Poor baby.
No, he didn't get enough signatures.
Oh, well.
There's probably a reason for that.
You know, it's kind of crazy. Here he's been in the three televised debates. He's the third. You would think, God, you know, you could.
Well, who's working on
that
his
much
staff,
support, right?
I mean, yeah.
Well, he doesn't have a lot of money, so
wow,
a lot of volunteers and probably not well organized. And maybe you should give our friend Ben a call.
Right.
Yeah.
Okay. Closing thoughts about Virginia and primaries and. You know, only that.
Well, Virginia's a swing state. That's kind of interesting. They're a Super Tuesday state, right?
I don't know, actually.
I'm pretty sure they are.
I think they are.
Yeah. So I don't know that anything's going to come of that. I think people who want to show up and vote are going to vote, and, you know, they're going to wipe their ass with the pledge.
Pledge, yeah. Yeah.
Well, Super Tuesday's what, like 40 days away?
Yeah, yeah. We're getting close, man. It seems like this campaign season is just, it'll never end. It'll go on for 10 years. You know, like this is the new normal. Just
right.
But no, people are going to actually start voting soon. And there's the Trump thing. I mean, you know, we just can't get away from it. There's people that believe it's all going to fall apart and that no one's actually going to, or very few are actually going to show up and vote for Trump. They just like to say they're going to vote for him. And it's like, who the hell knows, man?
I mean, at this point, there's not really enough time for it to all fall apart. I mean,
oh, sure there is. Sure there is. There's time. But the problem is everybody would, what has to happen is a bunch of these other assholes have to drop out, and none of them seem ready to do that.
No.
Most of them are going to wait until 5.5 weeks from now.
Yes.
Right. Because what they're finding in these polls, like the clever polling firms like Public Policy Polling are parsing out and saying, okay, if it was just these two candidates, or if it was just these two candidates, or if it was just these four candidates. And what they're finding is that if there was one establishment candidate out there, they'd probably be beating Trump in a lot of these states.
Yeah.
But because there's still five or six, they're all splitting the votes six ways.
Yep.
And none of them seem like, I mean, Jeb's not going to drop out. He's got money to go the distance. Christie, mm-hmm. for some reason, is going to hang on.
Rubio, for sure.
Kasich, I guess, is going to hang on. Cruz. Obviously, Rubio and Cruz aren't going anywhere. Cruz is not really establishment. But Carson, I guess, as long as he can still sell books, is going to keep doing it. I don't know.
I thought we heard the death rattle on Carson's campaign a while back.
Yeah,
but
sure, but he's still percolated at 5 or 6% here and there, and that's enough to make a difference. And you combine that with Carly's 2%, and you know Santorum's 1%,
and that
adds up.
It's crazy,
absolutely.
And it adds up, and it keeps Trump on top.
Yeah.
It surprises me when Trump keeps saying, "Oh, these people should drop out." It's like, no, you need them in.
Yeah, absolutely. They drop out, and your lead.
Maybe that's
way
reverse
down.
Psychology, right?
But
he's like, if he tells them to, they want to stick it to him. So they're, oh, I'll keep running.
They're all just afraid to be called a loser by him if they drop out. You're losers and you're quitters.
The longer this goes on, the more I think if somebody does overtake Trump, I can't see him going out gracefully.
No.
Do you see him just saying, had a great time, did my thing, I'm gonna endorse Ted Cruz now, and whatever.
No,
absolutely
fuck no.
Not.
Of course not. No, he's going to be a giant man baby, and throw a tantrum for God. I can't even imagine what it's going to look like when he flames out. But
scream
it's
about
be
conspiracy
epic.
Theories,
yep.
birther things.
Yep.
He'll just pull out everything.
Probably will be a laundry list of things the RNC did to sabotage him and how.
Totally.
Oh, well, they're doing it right now. He just right. doesn't care because he's so far out in front.
Right. I'm not saying they're not legitimate. I'm just saying right, that'll right. be what he's bitching about.
Oh, yeah. Frank Luntz is on there every day trying to, you know, scream into a vacuum how not to vote for Trump, but nobody's listening.
Yeah.
Right.
All right, so I want to move on to the State of the Union, which is going to be on Tuesday. It's Obama's last State of the Union address, which makes me sad. But lots of stuff to talk about there. So he released some sort of like teaser or trailer about the State of the Union.
Was Kylo Ren in it?
No. But he should have been.
Where's Luke?
Where's Rey, by the way? Anyway, different podcast. Mostly we feel like he's going to talk about legacy stuff, the stuff he's accomplished. And then also he has said that he wants to talk about a path going forward, not for his administration, but sort of for years to come.
Mm-hmm.
Which of course ties directly into presidential politics and the election.
Well, on the Democratic side. Yeah.
Yeah, yeah, exactly. He's trying to say like, here's the stuff that we still need to do and they're not going to do it if you vote for Republicans. Right. So like, that's his sort of, you know, last stand as big speech.
Here are all the issues left unresolved by my presidency, and we'll undo all of the progress that we've made.
Exactly.
If you don't vote the right way. But yeah. he'll have to use code language for that. I don't think he'll be able to come straight out and make a DNC
no.
speech.
No, definitely not. But, you're right, of course. But he will say, like, you know, depending on how it goes in the next few years, here are the things that we've done that could be undone, and here are the things we still want to do that will definitely not get done. And here are some things that may get done that you might really not like. And
right.
that's code language for please vote Democrat because we didn't get everything done we wanted to get done.
Right.
Well, segueing from that real quick, and Congress just sent a bill to the president's desk, finally, to repeal
yes.
Obamacare.
Yes,
and defund Planned Parenthood.
Uh-huh.
Neither of which a majority of the American public wants,
no.
despite
correct.
What my dad says.
Yes.
By now, the Obamacare thing has actually kind of flipped back over to the more people are like, just leave it alone already.
Yeah.
It is what it is.
Mm-hmm.
And Planned Parenthood is like 65-70%
yes.
yeah.
don't want it defunded.
Yeah.
So that got to the president's desk, and guess what? He vetoed it.
Yep.
Of course.
Yay, Obama.
But now they can say they got a bill to him, and is that going to satisfy the voters?
He's not running for re-election, though.
No,
I'm
talking about Congress and Paul Ryan.
Yeah.
I mean, they
yeah.
finally actually got a bill to his desk. And they knew he was going to veto it. And there wasn't even much noise about it from the Republicans. Like, there was a couple people, like a couple tweets, a couple asshole congressmen. Oh, he cowardly, you know, vetoed it on a Friday so nobody would see. But overall, you know, they're not going apeshit over this.
No, and I didn't even see any news about it until it was vetoed. And even then, it was kind of just a little
muted,
bit of,
muted, yeah.
Like, well, a little bit of chatter on Twitter where people were like, you know, if the president's not going to sign the one bill that comes across his desk, what good is he?
No.
I was like, what are you talking about? And looked into it and was like, oh, of course he vetoed that. Are you high?
He's been saying for months, if you send this to my desk, I will veto it. So don't bother. And they do it anyway for some political stunt. And Paul Ryan can say, oh, see, I'm the new speaker. I get things done.
Yeah, I got
that
a bill.
Get vetoed. I mean, it makes no sense to me.
Well, Paul Ryan's in a world of shit now, too. As we've said, they were already lining up, you know, Raul Labrador and you know, good old Louis Gohmert and the crazy
yeah.
caucus. They're
yeah.
See, we talked about this.
Yep.
What was he thinking? What did he think was he was going to accomplish? What did they think they were going to accomplish by strong harming him into this, other than killing his presidential aspirations? Like, what did they
just
think he could do that Boehner
party.
Couldn't?
They just needed to save the literally
for a month.
Yeah, they yeah. needed to be like, we have to have a speaker.
Someone
has
to
be
it.
The speaker and. No one can agree on anyone, so let's get this guy that everyone's like,
But why would Paul Ryan agree to do it? Because at first he was like, hell no.
Ego.
I couldn't stand to watch Boehner cry about it anymore.
Now he's going to be crying.
Yes. Okay, so back to State of the Union. Let's talk about the empty chair. Did you guys hear about this?
Yeah,
well, Clint Eastwood is back.
Well, interestingly. So Obama's going to leave an empty chair in Michelle Obama's booth at the State of the Union address, quote, to represent the victims of gun violence who no longer have a voice. It's the first time he's ever done it. The only time in recent history it's been done was by George W. Bush. He left an open seat in Laura Bush's box in 2003. I mean, her, you know what I mean? An open seat where she was sitting.
Right.
For the victims of 9/11.
So hold on a second. Hold on. Now you've confused me. Is okay. State of the Union, just you're talking about, he's addressing Congress.
Yeah, the State of the Union.
That it's addressing Congress. Because you can do a State of the Union just on TV.
Well, the State of the Union is the constitutionally required speech he has to give.
So for in front of Congress.
Yeah. Yes.
Okay, got it.
Like, the Supreme Court's going to be there. Everybody's going to be there, right? And he's always got the box with Obama or Michelle, and then she's got, like, the war veteran he wants to talk about whatever.
Mm-hmm.
So he's leaving his seat up there specifically next to her empty on purpose to make a political statement about gun violence.
Yeah.
So I think he's definitely going to be talking about the recent administrative action.
Yes.
I think he'll probably, in general, back to what you were saying before about legacy stuff and stuff that needs to stay in place without giving a DNC speech, he'll probably talk a lot about the administrative actions that he's taken. Executive action stuff. But the most recent one being on expansion of background checks, the 12 different things that were enacted with that.
Yes.
He'll definitely be speaking about that, I think, extensively.
I do, too. I mean, I think for him, it's his greatest frustration. I think I know for a fact from interviews that it's the one thing that most frustrates him and he sees as the biggest failing of his administration is how many mass shootings and how many gun violence deaths there have been and how
he couldn't get
no
Congress
action.
To do anything.
No matter what he tried. And so he made an executive action to say, all right, well, federally, this is what we're going to do.
Yeah, and what it actually was is very, very little. It's a very incremental, tiny step towards other things that need to be done.
Yeah, yes. I actually feel really bad for the guy. All of his, you know, big legacy items are all things that he's going to get attacked on the left for not being far enough. And most of them were originally ideas from the right in order to keep better action from being done from the left.
Sure, he still got attacked for it anyway. Not as hard as you would have expected, but he still, you know, oh, he's coming to take our guns, see, I told you.
I see a lot of the crazies come out when it was first announced, and the following day everyone had a day to digest what it was that it actually was, and the next day the media, essentially even crazy people, were like, well, that is reasonable.
Even Bill O'Reilly was like, I mean, yeah, we should have background checks, right?
There's no reason we shouldn't look into the background of people buying weapons.
Not if Obama says it, because it's a slippery slope to come in and take your guns and turn you into a gay Marxist socialist Muslim.
Yeah, but even Bill O'Reilly was like, nah, I think it's probably fine, that part of it. Like, I don't mind. Even my brother, who's like super pro-gun nut, super like kind of middle ground guy, was like, oh, yeah, I mean, I feel like for sure if there's loopholes, like we should check people's background before we give them a gun. And I'm like, great.
Yeah, these are what people are. This is what Congress refused to do, so Obama had to do it himself,
right.
The executive order. It's like Obamacare. Oh, I hate Obamacare. Then you tell them everything that's in it. Oh, that all sounds pretty good.
Well, and, you know, with the repeal Obamacare stuff, everyone goes through each individual, you know, piece of it. And they're like, oh, no, we like that.
Yeah.
Repeal the damn bill, but no, we like that.
Yeah, we like that. We like covering pre-existing conditions and being on insurance until you're 26 in the state marketplace and
all those things individually.
Tax credit.
Are great.
Yeah, that's all great.
Yeah.
What do you
good.
Not like?
Good.
Socialism. Okay.
So, yeah, State of the Union should be fun. I'm sad it'll be his last one. I hope it's epic. I don't know if I mentioned this before, but he said it was going to be like social media based. So it's going to be like an interactive State of the Union and watch out for that. So I don't know what that means or
That'll
how that
weird.
Will look. But yeah, that's what he said in his little
lots of emojis.
I wonder if he means like the run up to it, because there's quite a bit on Twitter of him, you know, like you said, with kind of the trailer and like there's lots of photos of him kind of getting ready, sitting with the speechwriters.
Non-traditional. And it'll be social media engaged, and we'll ask for engagement from the public during the speech.
Maybe he'll be flying around on a drone.
That's a great idea. I mean, I don't think he wants that to necessarily be a part of his legacy. Like Obama went out on a drone, dropped the mic.
No.
Okay, back to the gun thing real quick. I think it was last night there was a town hall thing about it.
Yeah.
And Anderson fucking Cooper, man. Seriously. It was like they were going over all the things. And, you know, Obama was explaining, okay, these are things that actually, you know, even the NRA has said is okay and, you know, people support. And Anderson Cooper's like, well, yeah, but Americans don't trust you. A lot of the gun rights people, they don't trust you. He's like, well, then they're conspiracy theorists. Well, you can't just call them conspiracy theorists. They don't trust you. I'm like, well, this is what I'm doing, and this is what the action calls for. Well, yeah, but these people don't trust you. And he's just like, Anderson, well, then I don't know what to tell you, man.
Like, why don't they trust me? Can you give me any evidence, any literally any single shred of evidence that would suggest that
Anderson Cooper was trying to bait him into something, and I'm not sure what it was. I'm not sure if he was trying to bait him into, like, the gaffe in 2008 when he said people cling to their guns and their Bibles or some, or if he was trying to, you know, call him a bunch of crazy crackers. I don't know what he was trying to do, but he was trying to goad Obama into something, and he didn't take the bait.
No, he never does.
No.
Yeah.
No.
I actually didn't think the people hold on to their guns and their Bibles thing was a gaffe. I was like, boom.
Goddamn right.
But you
probably
to,
ought not have said it.
You
but.
Have to understand that there's a large measure of people out there, they don't pay that close attention to politics, and something like that could rub them the wrong way.
Well, and it's a soundbite that does get,
oh, no,
get
it's
played
fine.
Out of context all the time.
It's fine for us, but if you're like sort of moderate, but you live, you know, in a rural place, and you know you polish your guns and your Bible sitting right next to you, and you know this guy says that, hey, what?
He's
what
making
does that
fun
mean?
Of me.
If you're
yeah.
literally holding on to a gun and a Bible when you hear the soundbite, you might think maybe my president doesn't like me that much.
Right.
Yeah.
Right. Right.
Yeah.
So there's that. One of the things that just really pissed me off shows how brainwashed people are. There was this lady who was like, you know, why are you trying to take my guns? I'm a rape victim and I have to have my gun in case
I
get victimized again. He's like, I'm not trying to take your gun. There's nothing in these executive orders that are anything close to that. Please read them. It basically is what he said.
Yeah.
And the look on the lady's face, I don't think he got through to her, but you know, what can you do?
Well, you can't, right? I mean, she's already got her mind made up.
No, she's got her mind made up that Obama's coming to take her gun.
Yep.
And
yep.
So, yeah.
And she has such a compelling story because she's a woman who was raped, and that is horrific. But she's also been, you know, probably planted as like, let's find the one pro-gun.
Maybe, but Obama also made the point, it was like, well, you know who I'd like to make it more difficult to have a gun? Guys who try to rape women.
Rape women, yeah.
Yeah. Yeah, so there's that.
I shouldn't have to carry a gun to not get raped, probably.
Right.
Well, you know, he also runs into the crowd, because the gun nut people are going to hang on to this, too, which is the, if he says anything along the lines of, if you like your gun, you can keep your gun.
If you like your gun, keep it. Well, unless it's a really, really shitty gun.
Right. And it backfires and hurts you.
Right.
Probably
right,
you
right.
shouldn't keep it.
We'll get you a better
case.
One.
Yeah.
We'll
get
you a better gun.
On the bronze plan.
On the bronze.
The bronze gun plan. So, closing thoughts here, or we want to talk about what we're doing here locally.
Well, first, I want to just, I have a couple of notes about the GOP response to the State of the Union.
Oh, yes.
Right.
Given
yes.
by Nikki Haley for, can anyone explain to me why?
I cannot wait.
VP.
But
potential.
Gross. Why on earth would she be the
help,
she's old news. I don't get it.
Well, is she up for re-election?
Not that I'm aware of.
I don't know. But I would like to list every person who's given the GOP response since Obama.
So aware are they now?
Has been. Yeah, basically.
Okay.
Okay, so 2009 is his inaugural address, so no response.
Yeah.
2010, Governor Bob McDonnell.
Okay.
He ended up in a good spot.
Uh-huh.
2011, Paul Ryan.
Oh, well, he's speaker now. Okay.
Right? 2012,
begrudgingly.
Mitch Daniels, who was the governor of Indiana from 2005-2013. Very unremarkable fellow. I was trying to do a little research at the end of the thing here, and I'm like, I got nothing interesting to say about him. So he's gone. He, like, works for Purdue now or something. 2013, Marco Rubio, the classic
water
bottle. Yep. 2014, Kathy McMorris Rogers, who is a representative from the state of Washington, crazy right winger against the Violence Against Women Act, like nutty.
Yeah.
And then my favorite is last year, Joni Ernst.
Oh,
from Iowa.
Hog castrating Joni Ernst.
That's exactly right. And this year it'll be Nikki Haley.
Yeah.
So those are always fun to watch.
No, it's
missed a jindal in there somewhere.
Oh my God, Bobby Jindal totally did do one. Which one did he do?
Not sure.
Bad research. Anyway, that's the list we found.
Did Jindal do one?
He did a response of some kind. It may not have
been.
Yeah,
I don't think it was
a
State of
the Union.
It was some kind of response to something.
He did, for sure.
A presidential address, maybe.
Yeah, something like that. Yeah. Okay, so that's, we'll probably podcast after the State of the Union.
Well, I was just going to chime in that this is the old Republican adage of, we need more women voters, so just shove a woman up there and put a microphone in front of
Ladies
her.
Ladies don't know anything. If they see one of their own, they'll vote for us.
Like Sarah Palin, yeah.
Yes.
Yeah. Right. And we all know how that turned out.
Yeah,
I see Nikki Haley, I mean, she's South Carolina, that's a safe state. The entire South, the state for is safe basically for Republicans for the most part. I mean, Virginia, North Carolina, Florida are still swing states, but like... South Carolina, Mississippi, Alabama, that's solid red. That's not going anywhere.
I know. It's weird. She's old news. She's a gross person. I don't like her at all. I don't know.
Relatively terrible, although I don't think that each of these individual people write their own response. It's not like a debate. It's I'm sure there's, RNC writing staff sitting there.
I'd be
there.
Pretty shocked if... For sure. The VP, the whoever wins the GOP nomination, if the VP is not a woman. In fact, I think they're going to check off every box they can. They're going to try to find a Hispanic woman in a swing state.
Lesbian.
No, definitely not.
Definitely not that. But yeah.
If they could get like a Tammy Duckworth who would be willing to be a Republican, which nope.
No, there's Susana Martinez is a Republican in New Mexico, I think.
Mm.
Veteran.
Maybe something like her. Yeah, someone like her. Maybe.
We'll see. We'll follow up post State of the Union and do a little podcasting for you. So locally, with our recall effort, go ahead.
Locally, as you may know, we are fueling an effort to recall State Representative Joanne Winholtz, who said some horrible, disgusting things in the wake of the shooting at the Planned Parenthood in Colorado Springs. We got some momentum going there, and we have an event that's going to be coming up in the next couple weeks. Our esteemed political advisor is working on that. And
our partners at Care2, who have a petition that they have gathered, I think over 60,000 signatures now, and I don't remember the exact number, from people across the country and, in fact, the world who saw what she said and really... We're offended by it. They're working with us closely on this event.
Yeah, as far as presidential politics go, that's under the radar now, but it's going to come up. Either Trump is going to say something, or we have a Supreme Court case that's coming up soon.
We do, yeah.
So oral arguments begin, I believe, next month, and then we're expecting...
Texas,
Yeah, we're expecting a decision sometime in July, I believe, as when they've promised it. And did you guys see the news about Obama and a bunch of the people from the NIH? Stepping in and asking the Supreme Court, please, to strike down the law?
Yeah, there was a bunch of people, right?
Yeah, like it was basically like the entire scientific and health
community. Oh, that's really going to move Scalia, yeah, I'm sure.
Yeah, well, and there was a bunch of lady lawyers who came to the Supreme Court. I think it was like 113 female attorneys who came to the court and shared their abortion stories and said, like, the reason I'm an attorney is because I had an abortion. Mm-hmm. The reason I have the life I do, the reason I had the education I do, like... It's not just these people in the periphery. I've stood in your courtroom.
Well,
and I've had an abortion.
It's all about Kennedy because he's the swing vote. We know how everybody else is going to go.
Well, yeah, and so, essentially Obama and basically the entire medical community stepped forward to try to sway Kennedy's opinion.
Like an amicus brief?
No, it was all just public statements.
And I think Kennedy is going to go the right way, but you never know.
I don't see him not buying the undue burden argument.
Me too.
He's too pragmatic to not see how
it would
that's
be
an
kind
issue.
Of a stretch given some of his recent decisions.
And I don't think he wants to overturn Roe. I don't.
No.
I don't. No, I think, you know,
Scalia,
we've talked
Alito,
about
Robert
before.
Sure do, sure.
Of course
but,
they do. Yeah, but Kennedy doesn't want to do that. He's conservative on like things we've talked about before, law enforcement, stuff like that. But I don't think that he wants to be known in history as overturning Roe or making abortion basically impossible. I just don't think that that's a legacy thing he wants or thinks is reasonable.
Right. Well, that was essentially the statement from the medical community was what this will do is make abortion a right, but by all practical purposes, unavailable.
Yeah.
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 Okay, so we're going to have Arliss Bunny back on soon, and I hope hopefully she's going to want to talk about The Big Short, which everybody needs to go see immediately.
Everyone must go see it.
8 or 9 times.
Yep.
In
it's
IMAX
amazing.
And 3D. No, I'm just kidding.
Don't do any of that. Just watch the movie.
They don't have it in IMAX. I was kidding. That would be silly. But Well, I guess I'd see it in IMAX, sure.
It's amazing. It really is. It's
it should win every damn Oscar.
Yeah.
I mean, not only is it an amazing story, it's a great movie. And having lived in Miami in the middle of the housing burst, there were scenes in it that happened to me like exactly verbatim. And I think I stood up in the middle of the movie theater and screamed like, that happened to me.
You didn't stand up, but you were like, that was me. Yeah, it's great.
So
the acting is phenomenal. The story is really well done. There's a lot of really complex things that are explained in a way that's really cute, but also really like you can understand it in a way that maybe you might not now.
Yeah.
So I recommend it for that highly.
And you see and absorb all this, and then you see all these Republican presidential candidates screaming about deregulation. It's amazing that they aren't being drawn and quartered or chased with pitchforks.
Yes.
It is just insane.
The other thing everybody must watch, if you haven't already heard, is Making a Murderer, which is on Netflix, which we have just finished, Dana and I. No spoilers, but we will be talking about it once I feel like the general public has seen it, because when we talk criminal justice, it's really compelling story.
A very important criminal justice story.
Yep.
Yeah. Amazing. And very frustrating.
Yeah. Yeah. So I've been hearing.
Yeah. Finish that shit.
Yeah, I'll get to it. You know, busy these days. Trying to make some time for Netflix and chill, maybe with Ted Cruz.
Yeah.
So, this has been Travis.
And Rachel.
And Dana.
As usual, stay active, stay involved, and stay tuned.